welcome to another episode of the Rogue Startups Podcast with Craig Hewitt and Dave Rodenbaugh. This is a podcast documenting the journey as self-funded business founders and sharing lessons, tips, and tricks for businesses following the same path as ours. The journey is long and winding, but we're glad you're joining us for it. And now it's time to go rogue with Dave and Craig.
All right, welcome to another episode of the Rogue Startups Podcast. Mr. Hewitt, how the heck are you today?
Man, I'm doing great. Doing great. We're in Paris this week for a little vacation, and the internet here is literally 10 times faster than my shitty internet is at home, so I'm like uploading videos and doing all sorts of crazy stuff that I shouldn't do on vacation, but as such is the life of a digital entrepreneur when you have good internet and it makes your week, I guess.
Yeah. I remain jealous of all who have good internet. There's a guy I work with in my freelancing job who has fiber to his house. It's like 100 gigabit connection.
Oh, yeah.
It's insanely, unrealistically fast. I mean, he shows me speed tests on it all the time and tells me that he can download like entire movies in seconds, and I'm like, you suck.
Yeah.
You're just such an ass. Here I am stuck on this tiny little 5 megabits connection here. And I could upgrade to Comcast. I hate them with the heat of 1,000 burning suns. I will never switch to them as long as I draw breath.
Yeah. Yeah. We were at a place this past summer that had fiber. It was like co-working space. And yeah, I mean, you could download a movie in a minute. It's just totally insane. But anyways, but yeah, Paris is, it's really, really nice this time of year. It's like all the Parisians finally have gotten out of the winter and just like laying outside all day and stuff. It's like you can see that the French summer is coming and no one's gonna do any work. It's you can tell already.
nice. Yeah. All right,
I guess I'll give a quick update on our podcast, on our launch. So we, Seriously Simple Podcasting and Seriously Simple Hosting, have been live for 2 weeks now, and our first trials are starting to convert, which is super awesome. So it's, you know, it was, I think I talked a little bit about it last week. The launch was, had some bumps, to put mildly, but we just released an update yesterday, actually, and it has gone very smoothly. We've not had any hate mail so far here, you know, 30 something hours later. So it's great that we were able to fix like the major two big problems that we had, other than the plugin breaking people's sites. Kind of the two things that the update kind of exposed in the code base, we were able to fix. And yeah, I feel pretty good about things getting closer to kind of stasis and working on marketing, which I think you and I have talked maybe a bit offline, but WordPress, the good of it, I think, and you've definitely seen this, is it's just a great marketing channel kind of built in. The bad is that the support is just bizarre. Just the innumerable options and interactions and dependencies, and it's just, it blows my mind all the time. But then I look at, like, we're just getting customers without doing any marketing. So that's kind of the trade-off, I guess, of WordPress. So we're building an explainer video. Have you done any explainer videos, Dave?
I did one for Schedule Watcher a long time ago, and it was just a very brief, like, minute thing that sort of walked through how the whole process works. And it was actually fairly successful. You know, a lot of people watched it. I think a lot of people converted based on it. And at the time I got it, you know, it was one of those animated ones, and I got it for like $500.
Yeah.
So it was a steal at the time. I think the guy even still does them now. So.
Yeah. No, I think that's exactly kind of what I'm looking at price-wise. I'm using Video Chef, videochef.co. Yeah, it's great. They do like flat images with screencasts interlaid and everything. So it's been a good process so far. We finally settled on the script yesterday. And I feel pretty good about the script. I feel good about the script. And if based on the work that they've sent as their examples and references, I feel good about it. But we're going to embed it in like the WordPress repo. So people will be able to watch the video as part of like the README or the meta text about the plugin. So yeah, it's something I see some plugins do, is have like an explainer video in the repo. So as far as our marketing, that's kind of the next thing I'm looking at there and trying to figure out on a bigger and kind of more organized scale how I'm going to approach marketing this. Because I feel like right now we're getting closer to the ship not sinking, which is kind of nice.
So speaking of not receiving hate mail this week, I actually did the launch of the letter for the support price increase this week with Business Directory. It's been live for 48 hours at this point. And of all the responses that I've had one that was sort of neutral, that was kind of like, I just bought this 6 months from you. Now you're asking me to renew. And then I had like one slightly negative, but it wasn't like vicious. She was just like, nah, I'm not going to renew. And then there's been like a lot of people that are like, yeah, sign me up. I'll totally grandfather in at your 25%. No problem. What do I do? So they were super excited to like jump on it, get whatever needs to be done. And the long form of the email apparently diffused or diluted whatever negative sentiments I sort of expected to come rolling into the box. It just it hasn't happened yet. And it usually happens within the first 24 hours. I mean, to be fair, a solid week would give me a better indicator, but so far it seems to be pretty reasonable. I'm kind of surprised, actually.
I got the email. We're a customer for our travel sites. I thought it was a great email. And yeah, I think you're right on with just explaining everything in at one time and in one place does diffuse people's kind of angst. I mean, you give them a lot of information and logic and reason, and you laid it all out in a very succinct way. Yeah, I think it's great. So with that, you grandfather people in for this year, but then when they renew next year, will they be going to the higher price?
No, that was the trick. So I'm giving people a 5 week window to grandfather in with automatic renewals at the current rates. So the support is going to go up as of July 1st at the new rates, but I'm letting everybody lock it in now. But they have to set up the automatic renewals. So that's the thing that I'm lacking at the moment. And I know that when, like, for example, Pippin switched from manual to automatic renewals, his renewal rates jumped from like 25% to like 60%. Even with failures and credit card declines and Dunning stuff going on, like that's still where he sat. So it was like more than doubling his support revenue. So even if I'm locking people in at this old rate for this 5 week window right now, I'm still winning. I'm still winning.
Because
And
those
then
people are
when
going into recurring automatic.
they're going into recurring automatic revenue. So even if I don't get more money out of them, the number of them that are going to be renewing next year is still higher than what I would be getting if I kept everything the same. And as of July 1st, then everybody who's renewing after that, they're going to be bumping up into the new price range, and they're going to be recurring on top of that. So it's
Oh,
like,
interesting. Yeah.
yeah. So I mean, I have it kind of built in. I did that mostly for just the goodwill factor. Like I'm giving them plenty of time, plenty of warning, and I'm letting them, for anybody who's already bought, this is what they get. So as of July 1st, it changes. But I even had one email. This always happens, right? So I already had one email from somebody who was like, "Well, we're evaluating your product and, we're thinking about doing this, but can you extend it till August 1st?" And I'm like, "Are you kidding me?
No.
You've already got 5 friggin' weeks. 5 weeks to make a decision here. If you can't make a decision in 5 weeks, you shouldn't be one of my customers." I mean, this just is not like, this is not an enterprise sales product. I am not SAP. I am not an Oracle database here. I am not, Microsoft SharePoint Enterprise Edition. This is a small WordPress plugin. You should be able to figure that out in 5 weeks. So I politely responded and gave them the no, we can't really do that. 5 weeks should be plenty of time, and I hope you can make a decision before June 30th. So
Oh, you're right. It's always something. It's always. I got an email from someone today, looking at our launch package, which is like $500 one time. And they're like, "This looks great, but we're tennis instructors and we can't afford this." No, it was their email. I was like, dude, I mean.
You're like, sorry.
Okay, like, you know, it's a freaking steal, even at that. Yeah, anyways, there's always somebody.
Yeah, I mean, there's always going to be some bottom-of-the-barrel customer asking for a discount.
Yeah, yeah,
and
for sure.
And those are the ones that you just politely say, you know, we're a great solution for a lot of people, but we're not for everybody. And if we're not for you, that's okay.
Yeah.
Here are some competitors that would love to have your low-margin, high-maintenance business.
Oh, man.
Yeah. But you know what the best part of this whole renewal thing has been?
What's that?
I haven't had to handle hardly any support emails. I'm loving it. Bobby is fully up to speed. There's a handful of things that just show up in my inbox, maybe like 3 to 5 a day, whereas it used to be somewhere in the 20 to 30 range. And these are ones like where she just doesn't, you know, she is not entirely sure what to do because it's really complex or weird, or it's something like she has to have access to the PayPal account to refund, which I haven't set up yet, but it just doesn't happen that often, so I'd prefer to handle all those myself anyway. So yeah, it's like all of these refunds, we had a brief discussion about what's the sort of the general lay of the land on this, and it's just been her cranking away on things. I'm so happy. I'm so bloody happy.
That's awesome. Yeah, that's awesome, yes. Man.
That is the best money I have ever spent. I am future Dave is kicking past Dave in the ass for not doing this sooner.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially if you can take the time that you were spending on that and move the revenue in the business forward, which putting out things like this, this support change in pricing and structure would allow you to do, because you wouldn't have been able to do this before with spending all that time in support, right?
No, and in fact, I have some more things that I need to do, but, you know, my bandwidth is now freed up so that I can queue these things all up and they're ready to go. And I had time to go do some testing on this recurring system while she was doing all the support. And I was able to work out some kinks and find some settings that I needed to change. And I just didn't have the bandwidth for that stuff before. And now I do. So that's great.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah. Nice. Mm-hmm. So speaking of ignoring people, this week we are talking about a blog post from a bit back, but we just kind of got it an email in the last week or so from Alex Turnbull of Groove about how to know what advice to take and what to ignore. I guess I'll preface this with, I think the more experienced we get, the more critical we are of people's advice.
Well, you should be.
And I think
you absolutely should be. Yes.
I think that's good. Because at first you take everyone's advice and you go in a million different directions, and that's bad. I mean, I think that's why a lot of people have trouble really starting this. They take everyone's advice and they think they should do 800 different business models, and they never really focus on one thing. And as we get more experienced, we think we know more things. But I think the openness maybe closes down potentially to a fault. But I do think that learning to say no and learning what advice or people giving advice are things that you should ignore is a really important skill that probably all of us continue to refine over time.
Absolutely. I sort of look back on, let's say, eight years ago when I got started as a solo founder here. And there was a lot of different people that I would really looked up to, and I'm like, what do you think I should do here? And they would give me something and I would be like, okay, great. And I go run off and do that. And then in the middle of that, I might go get a second response to that, and it might be totally contradictory advice. And at the time I was like, it could drop me into paralysis at times. And so at some point I was like, fuck it, I'm just going to ignore everything and I'm just going to do what I think is right. And sometimes that worked out and sometimes it didn't. But the article that we got from the Groove blog right here, which I'm sure most of the listeners in the audience are probably subscribed to Alex Turnbull's blog. They've had tons and tons of great content over the years. And what's awesome is he's continuing to retweet out the sort of greatest hits. And this is definitely one of them here about, how to figure out what kind of advice you should be taking. And so I thought it would be a good thing to discuss today, maybe talk about specific examples that we've had in our own businesses about how we've taken advice, how we evaluated whether that was good or bad advice to take, and on what criteria do we sort of figure that out.
Yeah.
So do you want to jump in and start here, Craig?
Yeah, for sure. So Alex kind of has a system or a framework of five questions that he kind of asks himself when he's thinking about asking advice for someone or has asked advice and is framing the perspective of someone's response. And so the first one is, what is this person's perspective for this advice? And so I think that knowing where someone is coming from is really important, and not just like what is their sort of general background or level of experience or something like that, but like have they been sort of like tainted with the experience of WordPress as a business or SaaS and e-commerce or whatever? What is someone's general sort of experience and perspective on something, and then specifically have they had particularly impactful positive or negative things that could jade them for or against the kind of area that you're asking for somebody about? I think everyone, opinions are like what, Dave? Opinions are like
opinions are like assholes. Everybody has one, and everybody else's stinks except yours.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think that's kind of what this is getting at, right? Is that no matter what someone says, it's jaded and biased pretty severely, probably, especially in our world where we have a lot of opinionated people. And so you got to take what someone says with a grain of salt and know where they're coming from with it.
Yep. And sort of along those same lines, not just their perspective, let's say that you understand their perspective, but the thing that I find is like the number one thing for me to sort of ask myself immediately when I'm getting somebody answering a question that I've asked is, how closely does the experience of the person that I'm talking to mirror my own? So let me throw out some examples here. Well, some of the early microcomps I went to, everybody was talking about SaaS, right? It was recurring revenue this and use, Stripe that and whatever. All of that had to do, all of that advice was coming from people who had done SaaS-specific businesses. And I had to take that information and then try to decide what could I apply into a WordPress business? Because WordPress wasn't recurring revenue. It wasn't a SaaS business. It didn't have like this ongoing component here. The lifetime value was something that you captured all up front. And I was hearing all of this advice about something that didn't really fit exactly into my world. So the first thing that I did when I was at MicroConf is start to sort of filter out that advice in general. But second, it also helped me find other people that were in that space and maybe just a little bit farther ahead so that I could actually find out, when you did this in your WordPress plugin, what was your experience with that? And that I found was much, much more helpful because their experience was something that I could directly not only relate to, but turn around and apply more or less unfiltered into the business. And I got better results out of it. I actually tried to apply some of those SaaS things, and some of them worked great. Like I added autoresponders because everybody was talking about autoresponders in their SaaSes, and I'm like, oh, that sounds kind of cool. But other stuff just didn't work with WordPress, and I can't think of a specific example offhand. But there were definitely a few things that I was trying to set up in there, and I just it didn't really fit into the WordPress world, so I had to kind of throw that idea away.
Yeah. Yeah, no, for sure. I think that how close someone is to your experience is a big indicator of probably how likely you are to take their advice. And I think it kind of leads into the next kind of point that we might consider is kind of what are your own biases regarding someone's advice? And so the way I think about this typically is, do I think that someone knows what they're talking about with respect to the thing that I asked about? And hopefully you only ask advice of people that you really respect and that you have a good chance of taking their advice seriously. But that's on a scale. It's not an absolute kind of zero or one thing. So how valid do you think you'll consider their response or their advice before they give it, probably? is something to think about as you're formulating kind of how and what you're going to ask somebody.
Oh, and this works two ways too. So there's another way. So can you take their advice? Do you have a bias against this person? Because let's say, for example, somebody comes up to you and says, "Hey, I'm an e-commerce guru," and you're talking about WordPress, and you're thinking, "What do e-commerce people know about WordPress? I'm just going to totally discount this person's advice altogether." And that may be a bad thing, or it may be a good thing. It's hard to tell. But at least you should be aware that that bias exists. I certainly have another bias that I have to be careful about, and that is there are certain people that I will give more credence to and less critical thought if I hear it coming from them. So, two great examples, Jason Cohen and Heaton Shaw. So, both of these guys, super, super smart. They know a lot of great stuff. They've had a lot of excellent experience. They've had both solo founder and venture capital experience, both. But if you just sort of take what they have to say unfiltered at their current place, you may end up doing something that is like completely insanely wrong. Because they're coming from a different perspective. Again, this gets back to that first one, right? About consider what their perspective is. They may be talking from a venture capital perspective, and you may be thinking from a single founder perspective, and you may not have communicated that well enough. And then they start giving you that advice, and because it's Heaton or Jason, you're like, "Oh my God, they're so smart. I better do exactly what they say." Like you still, I mean, it doesn't matter if it comes from Heaton fucking Shaw. You have to critically evaluate it and decide, is this the right decision for my business? Do I have enough information to evaluate it properly? And by the way, most of the time, Heaton Shaw is probably right about a lot of different things. And he's also really super good, I've noticed. If you say, "I'm at XYZ stage of my business," he'll tailor his advice specifically for that stage because he remembers all of the stages. Like he's got an amazing memory for stuff like that. So even though he's traveled the whole gamut and done venture funding and solo bootstrapping and all of this good stuff, he remembers that if you're at this stage, this is what made him successful at that stage in that context. But you have to make sure that you understand that they're giving you advice in that context. So, yeah, the bias thing bites both ways. You got to be super careful about that.
Yeah. So something else I think is something we're kind of dancing around and not avoiding it, but are you able to implement the advice they're giving? Like you personally, I am not Heaton Shaw or Rob Walling or Jason Cohen or whatever, right? Can Craig Hewitt pull off the thing they're suggesting that I do? And I think that that's not something that Alex talks about, but just kind of comes to mind when I get advice from somebody and they say you should do X, Y, and Z. Sometimes I say, "Right, you could do that and pull that off, right?" But I'm not Justin Jackson with 50,000 Twitter followers or something. I couldn't pull off building a YouTube channel or whatever. So I think that is something that you have to consider is. Like it is where this person is coming from with the assets that they have, either experience or skills or assets, in the bank.
Right,
How
like
does that
technical versus
frame?
non-technical founders,
Yeah,
right?
yeah. How
Yeah,
does
so
that
you as
frame your ability to execute what they're talking about?
Right. So I, as a technical founder, might consider something super easy and give advice to say, "Oh, you should just implement this PHP hook in your WordPress plugin." And if you're a non-technical founder, you're going to look at me with this glazed look and say, "Dave, that's just not, I don't even understand what you just said. I sort of got it, but I'm not really sure how to go with that." And in that case, maybe you have to get somebody else that has the right set of skills and get them looped in on that. So, this is your bonus tip. We were going to go through five, but now you got six.
Yep, that's right.
Only here on Rogue Startups do you get bonus tips. The next point that Alex brings up, and this is a great one right here. So, if you're getting a bunch of advice the first thing that you should, well, after you've gone through the perspective and the biases and other things and figured out whether this is something that's worth listening to and what am I bringing to the table and can I do this and all of this other stuff, chances are you're probably not asking just one person about this. You're probably asking multiples. So now you got to ask yourself, how does this compare with the advice I'm getting from everybody else? One thing that I think can be super, super frustrating about getting advice is that you go out to four different people and you get four different things to do. Entirely different. They all sound like they're coming from really smart, really experienced people who know what the fuck they're talking about. And you're sitting in the middle of all of that going, well, which one of these am I supposed to follow? Like, that's super frustrating. And, you know, that certainly was my early experience here with the cold email stuff. I went and talked to a bunch of different people. Everybody had direct cold email experience. They were all bootstrappers and SaaS. So I thought I had, like, the right stuff. I knew that they were working at businesses that were either right where I was at, a little bit ahead, or way ahead. So there was a difference of, you know, stages in their businesses. But then I would get these various perspectives on what should be inside of the cold email, and everybody was all over the map on it. And I'm sitting here scratching my head going, well, which one's going to fucking work? I don't know. So sometimes you have to sit there and say, you know, which of these is the one that I think most closely mirrors that experience I'm looking for? So in comparing it to the other advice, maybe you have to say, look, these are all smart people, but I got to discard this based on this. Or the other side of this is what, Craig?
Yeah, so asking more people, and Alex talks about this being kind of the equivalent of a second opinion in the medical field. But yeah, I mean, you know, Dave, asking multiple people in a kind of homogenous cohort what they thought of a topic, I guess it didn't really pan out great for you, because you had people coming from the same perspectives, probably of similar backgrounds, giving you advice about the same thing, and people that you definitely respect, and they gave you very different answers, which I know kind of left you confounded. But yeah, I think that you were certainly asking yourself this, kind of how does this compare to other advice I got, with each of their responses, and probably a little bit framing from their kind of particular business experiences. But I think that the tough part is kind of leading into the last piece, is like, once you've gotten the advice from multiple people and framed it with their backgrounds and experiences and biases and everything, how do you decide what to go with and be cool with living with the decision you make, knowing that a lot of other people kind of have influenced your decision? Because these are not trivial decisions that you would go through the process of asking advice for. I think that learning kind of like the core lesson of what people are giving you advice about is really important, and like not just like copying pasting the code from Stack Overflow, but like kind of understanding what they're talking about, right? And the business lesson behind it is kind of what I go for when I'm asking for advice, is like, kind of generally, how do you approach this thing? Talking about Heaton Shaw, I think he's really good at that, kind of teaching the lesson, not the answer.
Yeah, so Heaton's really good about giving you that broader perspective, and then ultimately you can decide what contextually makes sense right there. But in terms of living with this advice, I mean, ultimately, it doesn't matter how many people are giving you advice. You're the one who has to implement it. So whatever decision you end up making, you are going to be the one that takes full responsibility for it, right?
Yeah, for sure. For sure. I mean, you gotta write that email. You got to live with the business consequences of whatever you decide to do. And that's why I think learning the lesson is important, because then you can kind of maybe even make up your own answer, not one that someone else gave you.
Yeah. And so I think that sort of brings us to the last point here, and that is, if the advice, you take whatever you've got in terms of the advice, and then you have to decide, is this, if I'm wrong about this, what's the consequence of that? And even if it goes against what somebody else is saying, if you can say to yourself, well, if I'm wrong, then I can still do another experiment. Or if I'm wrong, I can try this other channel. Or if I'm wrong, I can write another cold email sequence. So this is where I ended up with on getting like these four different perspectives on cold email, is that it came down to everybody had a slightly different way they thought that the email sequence should actually run. So I said, fuck it, I'll just create different email sequences and I'll drop some contacts in it and I'll see how it performs. And if I'm wrong about any one sequence, well, I've lost, you know, maybe 100, 200 contacts. Not a big deal. I can always get more. And so it wasn't like, oh my God, my business is going to crater if I do this decision. You know, it was, how can I validate which one of these perspectives is the one that works in my situation right here? So that was my gut advice, was to say, all right, well, my gut said, let's just test these out and see which one's best. Because I didn't really have a gut feeling if, you know, I did this direct ask versus this indirect ask versus this very short ask versus this different short ask, which of those was going to work. And so that's why I just created three different sequences, soon to be a fourth, and just tried them out.
Yeah.
And I think that's ultimately what you end up having to do, is you have to trust your gut. And my gut was telling me, you know, just try them out and see which one's right, because these are four fucking smart people and they're telling you different ways to do it. And you don't know, and they really don't know either, because, you know, I brought the rest of the context to the table and they were all like, well, I think this is going to work. You know, mine was over here and looked sort of like that, but you don't really know. So ultimately, you've got to step up, trust your gut, and live with the consequences of that. So you have to decide what's the worst thing that can happen if I follow this person's advice. And if that worst thing happens to be my whole business craters, well, maybe you don't want to follow that advice.
Right.
But yeah, but you know, maybe you want to reframe it or do something different or whatever. But that, you know, can you live with that advice being wrong? That's the important point.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that brings up a good point generally, is that asking for advice is a dangerous thing, because in a way it's kind of, you're asking for an out of really figuring out the problem for your business, and potentially, at least in your own mind, sort of putting part of the responsibility or the blame on someone else. So, you know, Dave, you're kind of sitting there with your cold email, or me with, you know, kind of what decision do I want, or what direction do I want the business to take? I ask people's advice and they say, oh, you could do this, you could sell that, or move into SaaS, or sell an info product, all that kind of stuff. If I make any of those decisions down the road, if it goes bad, I'm going to say, oh man, I can't believe I talked to whoever and they said I should do this. They're such fucking idiots, right? So, like, I think you have to be really sort of careful with advice that, like, it's no one else's business for sure. No one is going to care as much as you do. Ask advice to get, you know, a tidbit here or there. But I think you got to be a little careful asking for advice, because in a way it is going to kind of give you that emotional and mental crutch.
Yeah. And on the flip side of that, I think it's also important. It's easy for somebody to give advice. Like, if you've read a lot of blog articles and you don't have a lot of experience with stuff, you're going to think, hey, you know, I've kind of read a lot about this and maybe this is a stuff that's applicable or not. That sort of advice, I think, is the most dangerous of all. So I have tried to frame my specific, when somebody asks me a question for something like that, I think to myself, do I have experience with this? If the answer is no, I'm going to warn them up front and say, you know, I haven't had a lot of experience with that. And maybe I'll point them and say, hey, maybe you want to go talk to Steli Efti about that, because he's like the sales guru. And that way I can at least know that I've pushed them off to somebody who has a ton of experience in that and would have much better contextual information to give than whatever bullshit I would spout. But if there is something that I've had experience with, then what I'll probably do is I'll relate it in the context of a story, or talk about, well, this was my experience and here was the context around that experience, and then let them decide, does that apply to your situation? Because you're not necessarily going to know all of the ins and outs and the inputs of what's going into that particular decision for them. And there's definitely better ways to ask than others when you're asking for advice, right?
Yeah, for sure, for sure. I mean, I think it's like a lot of questions is sort of, we talked about framing is very important, open-ended or not kind of an A or B response when you're asking for advice are things that are definitely good places to start. But I think it's fair to let someone kind of qualify their response too. So talking about where they come from and their experiences and their history, letting them kind of express that specifically within their response can be helpful too. Because you know, this one time I did this, and then it ended up being like that. So I think you should do this. It is kind of the answer you get sometimes.
Right. So if you're asking for advice, make sure that you throw out enough information that the person that you're asking can give the right answer for you. So you want to make sure that you tell them what is it that you want to have out of this decision right here, and what things have you already considered as part of the decision that you've been going through at this point, and include things like evidence that you've actually thought hard about this, because sometimes, you know, people come up with advice and they're just being lazy and they don't want to actually figure stuff out, so they'll just come up and say, "Well, what did you do?"
Right.
And that's, you know, that's one way of going about it, but you know, I don't think people really have a lot of respect for that, because it's if you haven't thought long and hard about it, you're not getting as interesting a conversation about it, because that can really shut things down fast. If you say, "Well, I want this, these are the options I think," and then somebody who has had experience with that might turn around and come back and say, "Well, okay, if you've been thinking about this, why are these two options still on the table? Because they are really boneheaded, and here's why, blah, blah, blah." And so, you know, that sort of thing, you need to put some thought into it as well. Advice is not just somebody hands you the golden idol and that you run out of the temple and that you're rich, you know. You have to know what's the bag of sand weigh and how much is that compared to the idol, and am I going to trigger the massive boulder trap that's going to come and squash me like a bug? That kind of stuff.
And the
That was
guys
a
with the
really
dart and
bad.
the guys with the blow darts when he gets out of the cave. That's the best part, right?
That's the best part, yeah. That was a bad Indiana Jones reference, though. That was a really strained, yeah. So this is the word. This year's worst analogy goes to, yeah.
So we have given a lot of advice in this episode. So definitely sort of think about where we're coming from, if we're qualified to give this advice, I guess, and let us know what you think. I mean, when you are asking for advice on these big decisions, what kind of things do you think about? How do you approach it? We'd love to hear from you. Drop a comment in the section below for this episode and let us know what you think. And if you're enjoying the show, leave us a review in iTunes. 5 stars is always appreciated, and we'll see you next time.
And that's our episode for this week. If you have any questions or comments, please let us know at podcast@roguestartups.com. Subscribe to us in iTunes by searching for Rogue Startups. And be sure to visit roguestartups.com for full show notes on each episode. If you're enjoying the show, we'd sure appreciate a review in iTunes. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.